Houston. I am recused from this matter. Justice Miller Lerman will preside. And Mr. Smith, give me a moment to get out of the courtroom, and then you may proceed.
Good morning. The next case is Robinson versus Houston. Mr. Smith, before you make your appearance, let me just verify. No one has signed in for Mr. Robinson, and I want to verify that there's no appearance on his behalf. Okay, seeing none, Mr. Smith, thank you.
And so the record's clear, I had no contact with anyone that indicated they would be appearing today on behalf of Mr. Robinson. James D. Smith, Assistant Attorney General, appearing for the appellees in this case. This case is an attempted interlocutory appeal of a district court order denying informapauperous status to a prisoner under the three strikes provision of section 25-3401.
Well, it's withdrawing permission. The court initially granted permission, and now after the transfer, the new judge, different judge, withdraws the permission.
The judge does, but still the order is denying informapauperous. I think it's properly characterized as to the appeal is from that order.
For the moment, I want to disregard that, but we'll come back to it before you're done.
Okay. My argument is that the court does not have jurisdiction to consider this appeal because there is no statute authorizing the appeal. Specifically, the three strikes statute is a limitation on the right for IFP cases. And the three strikes limiting statute, unlike the general IFP statute, does not authorize interlocutory appeals from denial of IFP status. The general IFP statute, 25-2301.02, authorizes interlocutory appeals from denial of IFP status only when the district court denied IFP status for one of two reasons. One reason would be the plaintiff had sufficient funds to pay the costs, and the second reason would be that the plaintiff was asserting a frivolous legal position.
That's based on the premise that sub 2 applies only to those situations of sub 1.
It would be based upon the language of the statute, which provides for an objection only on those two grounds, and if that objection is sustained, then gives the right to an interlocutory appeal.
Well, the first sentence of subsection 2 doesn't expressly relate back to subsection 1. It just says, in the event an application to proceed informapauperous is denied and an appeal is taken therefrom, the aggrieved party may make application for a transfer.
That's true, but I also think you have to look at it in the context of subsection 1, which only gives two grounds to object under that statute, and if that objection is sustained, thus on one of those two grounds, then you have a right to IFP appeal. The district court did not deny IFP on either of those two grounds. The district court denied IFP specifically on the three-strike statute, which does not provide for an interlocutory appeal.
Counsel, yeah. I'm sorry.
Go
please.
Ahead. Go ahead.
Counsel, the 25-3401 you described as a limitation on informapauperous. You've described it as a three strikes. What is your interpretation of the last sentence in subsection 2A, which basically says if those three strikes have occurred, then an inmate may not proceed informapauperous in a civil action without leave of court? How is that different than asking for leave to proceed informapauperous in the first place? What's the difference? If you've got to ask for leave of court to proceed IFP in the first instance, and you can't proceed after three strikes without leave of court, what, if anything, has this three-strike statute done to our jurisprudence?
Well, what the statute does is still give the court some kind of jurisdiction to allow a person to proceed IFP even though they violated the three strikes provision, it really does not clarify what that leave of court would consist of.
It doesn't say denial. Just says you can't be granted IFP without leave of court. Isn't that what it
shall
says?
Shall not be permitted to proceed in forma pauperis for any without leave of court, which means you're not permitted unless the court allows you, gives you some leave for some
by reason. Operation of law?
Equity, fairness, whatever but, principle.
But cannot proceed by operation of law or something.
Cannot proceed.
In the absence of explicit leave?
Explicit leave of the court.
Isn't that always true?
Isn't it always true that...
That you can't proceed in forma pauperis without leave of court?
Oh, sure. You have to have... you can't just go ahead and file something and say, I'm automatically entitled to IFP status. You still have to get...
As a general matter,
but the statute specifically also says you can deny IFP status when you violate the three strikes provision, and this district judge specifically concluded that there was a violation of the three strikes provision. I'm not giving you leave of court. IFP is denied. And there's no provision in that statute.
Should we read this statute in Article 34 in pari materia with the statute in Article 23?
If you do, you still have the problem of Chapter 25 specifically provides for interlocutory appeals from the denial of grounds. Neither one of those two grounds are present, so even if you read it in conjunction, you still have to have a statute authorizing an interlocutory appeal on the statute that allows it is from a denial of one. Which is not what happened here.
At some point, taking your rationale for the moment, the judge's order, Judge Ott's order, authorized either pay the fee or I'm going to dismiss this as classic conditional order. So it's not been dismissed yet. Presumably, if the fee wasn't paid at some point and the appeal hadn't been taken, if we were to dismiss, for example, the time would run, the district court would dismiss, and there would be a final order subject to appeal.
Well, you would have a final order when the district court enters a dismissal order.
Right.
And then you fall into the general rule that if you're appealing from a final order, then you have authority to file an appeal. But I would say you don't have the cart running the horse. You still have the general principle. You have to have a statute authorizing appeal from a final judgment. This is not a final judgment. Not a final order. Not yet. So he's not properly.
So, but if we buy on with this, at some point, he's going to have a final order where he can take an appeal, correct?
Or he's going to pay the fees and you're not going to see this case again.
Okay. Now, let's assume that we buy on with this. The judge dismisses, he doesn't pay the fee. The judge dismisses, you're out of court. He then files a notice of appeal accompanied by an IFP motion. At that point, does he fall into the ability to appeal without fee when IFP has been denied?
That's a good question, so I'm going to take a quick look at the statute again. You still... I guess you'd have to try to decide under the analysis of the final appealable order. And a judge says, I'm not granting you IFP status for this reason, whether he's got some right to ground to appeal that. I think that would probably be in the next case if we get there, as to whether he's got a right to appeal by filing an IFP.
So
if the denial was on the three strikes.
We can't rule out the possibility of an error in application of the three strikes rule
for example, someone's, they think there are three strikes, but one of the strikes is someone else. It's not actually that defendant. And the trial court makes a mistake. You're not suggesting that that can't be corrected by appeal and that the appeal can't be taken in form of papyrus, are you?
I'm not suggesting that at this time because, frankly, I haven't analyzed it in that context like I would say that. Maybe in this case, which then comes down to, are you entitled to IFP status when you look at 2A of Chapter 34 and the language of that? Does that mean even if you've got a final appeal, final order, can you still file IFP and proceed further when you're looking at that statute? I don't know. I haven't analyzed it to that extent. I've analyzed it to the extent is the appellant properly here now. My argument is this.
Okay, thank you.
One last quick question.
What difference does it make that the first judge granted it? Once it's been granted,
this goes back to Judge Stacy's question. Once the leave of court was granted, isn't that statute satisfied?
No, I think it fall into, and I can cite cases that courts have part of persisting. If the former ruling was wrong and the trial court still has the case in its control, we cite City of Wood River v. Mayor Melkus, 233 Nebraska 179, Haiti v. Orta, 111-521, you're still talking about an interlocutory order. The case is still in the district court. Correct.
Thank you.
We are adjourned.